Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Hello and welcome to the I Could Never Do That podcast. I'm Carrie Barrett, and these are the stories of people who have gone into the arena and fought hard to achieve the unthinkable in spite of the fact that, yes, sometimes they are scared and do have some insecurities. Are you ready to go in? It's my hope that after hearing some of these interviews with thought leaders and artists, athletes, musicians, and entrepreneurs, that maybe you too will be able to go from, I could never do that, to, you know what? Maybe I can. My guest today, Kim Murphy, is in my eye a shining example of what I look for in an I Could Never Do That podcast guest. Kim was born and raised on a farm in Texarkana, Texas, which whatever image you just conjured up in your brain is probably correct, but it was about as ordinary an upbringing as you could have. Her dad grew corn and soy and lots of grain, and her dad's illness and subsequent passing led to a massive health and lifestyle change for Kim, which led to a complete career change and has recently led to a booming online coaching business and a brand new book. And now we're talking, right? Now we've got all the ingredients of a smashing episode of somebody who has faced the I could never do that's full on and has crashed through a lot of those barriers. So we talk mostly today about her transition to a whole food plant-based diet because that's pretty much the catalyst for everything else that her life has become. And what I want to stress, though, in this conversation is that this isn't a chat about becoming a vegan or there's no propaganda here necessarily, but this is a shared journey of somebody who she actually exposes a lot of her vulnerabilities. And she's conquered, like I said, so many of those roadblocks that would otherwise stop most of us in our tracks from making any sort of lasting habit change or, God forbid, a career change or, wow, even to the point of buckling down for over a year to write the book that is in your head. So please welcome my guest, Kim Murphy. Kim, welcome I Could Never Do That. Yeah, Thanks for coming over.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm so glad to be here. I love your house. It's beautiful.
Thank you. How convenient that we live in the same city.
It's perfect.
Yes. Austin, Texas is where we are recording right now. And it has been a hot second since I've done an interview. So forgive me if I'm a little raw in this, but you and I got to know each other a year ago with Team Plant Strong. Which was created by the company Plant Strong and Rip Esselstyn, and we ran a half marathon together. So first of all, how did that go for you last year?
That was pretty good. My training was like a little off last year. I was out of town a lot, so I was just happy to get through and survive, and so I made it through, and I hadn't run one in years, so that was the first one kind of like back in, you know, dust the rust off, and
yeah.
So this year, I feel much more confident and like actually excited. I'm like, okay I'm going to do more than just make it through, so yeah.
Well, and I feel like last year, correct me if I'm wrong, like you were fairly new to Austin, mm-hmm. and so weren't completely familiar with the course and the hills of the course.
Had no idea what I was getting myself into. Yeah. Yeah. It was hard enough throughout the whole thing, and then you get to that end and you just look up and you're like, no.
It's laughable.
It is laughable.
It's, yeah, that last hill it's on like, 15th is laughable.
Who designed this course? Like, I thought that was a good idea.
I know. And in fact, I ended up walking some of that hill because I started the half marathon in the very back, mm-hmm. Not totally intentionally, but I was saying hi to people, mm-hmm. and trying to get photos of all of our other Team Plant Strong members. And I just somehow ended up in the back.
Yeah.
And so I spent the entire race really just like trying to work my way up and through all the crowds, mm-hmm. and I'm weaving and I'm bobbing. And anytime I would see a green Team Plant Strong shirt, I would like dart across the the road, try to get a photo of them, you know, give them a high five, and then run my way up to the next person I could pass. By the time I got to that hill at mile 12 and a half, I was so shot that I did walk some of it. Unfortunately, one of my friends was there in a like Wonder Woman costume and busted me on that.
I was totally like taking breaks and like just have to stop and wait in line for the bathroom. I'm like, okay, my time would have been like really even really better. It was just not waiting for the bathroom.
Didn't anyone tell you it's a race?
I know, you know, it's like, I had to go. It was like, well,
hey man, I hear you. Well, and so the Team Plant Strong thing wouldn't have even been possible for you if you hadn't discovered plant-based nutrition in 2019-ish or so is when you made a transition to a whole food plant-based diet, which I definitely want to talk about. But I want to talk a little bit more about you and your family and your upbringing because there was an impetus for you to make a change, and it had a lot to do with your family. So talk a little bit about, you know, your dynamic, how you grew up, where you grew up, and a little bit about your background.
Yeah. So I have born and raised in Texas, but I grew up in East Texas in Texarkana. My dad was a farmer. It was like crops and grains and corn and soy, and but we had a garden and things like that. But growing up, I thought that, you know, we ate well. I thought my dad was healthy. And I kind of always knew like he had like health problems. But as a kid, you just see a lot of people with health problems. And so you just think, oh, that's just normal for growing older. And he had high cholesterol, high blood pressure. When I was in college, I got a phone call from my mom, and she says, your dad's being rushed to, you know, the hospital for emergency bypass surgery. Like he basically failed a stress test so fast that they were like, stop, get off. You're getting on an ambulance right now. Like it was that serious. 100% blockage.
And how old would he have been about approximately?
Let's see. That was in the 90s. He was born in the 30s. So 60s.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay. 60s.
So young.
I know. You know, to me, and that's the thing about my dad is he always looked like 10 years younger. You would never have thought that he was an older dad to me. He was like 45 when I was born.
Okay.
So, you know, the cohort for me is actually kind of funny for like, you know, people who are like, you know, 10, 15 years older than me are experiencing what I experienced at a younger age. And so he just always looked so much younger, and, you know, just kind of, it felt like it kind of came out of nowhere, but had a quadruple bypass. And, you know, got through it, you know, it was normal, I suppose, you know, but still, of course, on medications and all those things.
Was he a smoker or a drinker? No.
Rarely, he never smoked, rarely drank. You know, we just ate the healthy version of the standard American diet, you know, it was grilled chicken and, skim milk and, you know, white rice. And he would do, you know, we definitely have vegetables, but it was not like the center of our diet. It was definitely meat, you know, was always the biggest thing, you know, around the plate, you know.
Did you have animals on the farm?
We did not. I think when my dad first started farming, he did, but a switch to that was actually just not a like profitable way to even like survive back then. Yeah. And that was really going down. And so he switched to crops and did a lot of test stuff for the government and soy and grain and things like that. So we always had, you know, vegetables, but it was not, you know, the center of our diet. It was always just very meat based. And, you know, you at that time it was very much like, oh, chicken is good for you and fish and things like that. And which kind of still, you know, perpetuates today. And so, you know, he had the heart disease and the quadruple bypass. And then, it was about 5-7 years later, he was prostate cancer.
Okay.
And went and had treatment for that and everything, you know, fine, normal, I suppose. And then it was about 2000. It was right around when my first son was born, around 2008 was when my brother and I started realizing that, he was forgetting things. And it wasn't normal things. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I forgot to pick up eggs at the store. It was taking his car clicker and trying to shut the garage with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, and so it was like little things like that. Like, and he would just keep, you know, pressing the car, you know, unlock button. And we were like, Dad, what are you doing? He was like, the garage won't shut. You know, it's like, Dad, that's the car keys.
Yeah. And was your mom noticing any of this as well?
No, they were divorced at the time. Okay. So she wasn't, you know, at the house or anything around him. She was living here in Austin, actually. He was still in Texarkana, but whenever we would go visit, it was just progressively getting worse and paranoid too, like very like thinking, you know, people are out to get him and, you know, just strange things. And then one of the worst ones, scariest ones, was when we were there, my husband and I went to visit, and my dad and my husband decided to go out and pick up some food and bring it back. And so my dad was driving, and he started going the wrong way down a one-way street. And my husband and him get back, and my husband's like, oh my gosh, you will not believe what just happened. We just about died. You know, so he was like, at that point, it was like a safety issue of like, he can't even drive anymore. And so we had to, you know, put him in a facility. And that was rough because he was always a very independent person. And he would, you know, not realize it was like he kept forgetting that he had Alzheimer's. Of course, you have to keep telling them.
The cruel irony of that.
It is. And so, you know, and it was just the slowest, most painful thing to watch, because they just literally fade away in front of you. And it's not just their memory, it's their personality, you know, and it's, and even their physical, what they look like completely changes too. You know, they're just everything. And
were you in Austin at that point, or were you still nearby?
We were in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so my brother was down here in Austin, and we actually, my brother actually ended up moving him. He was in a facility in Texarkana, which was kind of a, it wasn't advanced enough by the time, like he was there for a few years, but it got to the point where they could not, he was like leaving and like running away and, you know, and stuff like that. And so, my brother actually, he took my dad and had him live at their house. And he and his wife and my wife's aunt took care of him for a year in the house until it just got unmanageable, like just bathing and just, I mean, just physical things, like he couldn't feed himself and, you know, just do normal things. And so at that point, they found a higher level facility here in Austin. That was where he spent. It was only, well, that's been a few different places, but, you know, that was really the last couple years of his life.
Okay. You know, just, and you lost him when?
It was 2018. And it was the Christmas before that in 2017, the last time I saw him, and he didn't know who I was. That was like, you know, he would always kind of like, you know, see you. I mean, he, for a second when we were there, I saw his face light up, you know, he, for a few seconds, he like, I could tell he recognized us, and then it was gone, you know, and he's just couldn't communicate. And that's just, you know, that's just one of those things you don't wish on anybody.
It's cruel.
It is.
It's a cruel, cruel disease. And I have some personal experience with it as well, unfortunately. And I in researching dementia and Alzheimer's with my family situation, I heard somebody say, perhaps it was a podcast, that their memory, if we think about how, like when you and I have a dream at night, and like when we're in the dream, whatever, it's either amazing or it's terrible or whatever. But the second you wake up, you might have an emotional impression left, but you're like, I have no idea what that was. Mm-hmm. It's like the dream is just gone. And they likened a dementia brain similar to that of they might have like a moment of lucidity, and then it's just gone.
Yeah.
And which is why there's repetition and memories of more long-term memories versus short-term memories, things like that. So yeah, it is cruel in many ways. And at what point then did you? So he passed away in 2018. At what point were you thinking, okay, this is going to affect me at some point, or this could potentially affect me? What can I do to make changes that may have a positive impact on your future? It's just weird to connect. Like, how did you make that connection of like, oh, I should probably change some things?
Yeah. It really wasn't until after he had passed, because before that, you know, all the doctors were just telling us the traditional advice. There's nothing you can do. Diet has nothing to do with it. It's hereditary. You know, try this drug, try this drug. Of course, nothing worked. And so I just assumed that they were correct. They're doctors. They're supposed to know this stuff, right? And so after he passed, it was just such a moment in my life, because I was turning 40. It's like, you know, midlife crisis. I call it the midlife awakening, when you like awaken to like, oh my gosh, like let's look at this. And I've just always been curious, and I had actually learned about plant-based eating several years before, but couldn't keep it going. It was more of like a diet, like weight loss. And so I hadn't really, I mean, I knew about a lot of the health benefits of it, but I did not know about the Alzheimer's. I just assumed, oh, well, that's different. And nothing can help that.
What was your health like at the time? Were you overweight? Were you experiencing any, you know, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, or anything like that?
I was overweight, and I had brain fog.
Oh.
And so that was really a like, I just lost my dad to Alzheimer's, and I see myself already going down that path. And so I don't know what it was that just made me think, well, maybe I should look into more of the plant-based eating. But I cracked open some, you know, books that I had read before, and read some more of them, like, you know, Dr. Furman's books, Dr. Esselstyn's books, and Dr. T. Colin Campbell, just everybody. And as I was reading it, I realized, oh, this can help Alzheimer's too. This can prevent this from happening to me. And the more that I read, the more I was appalled that A, nobody's talking about this, you know, and we're telling people, oh, there's nothing you can do with Alzheimer's, where actually it's 90% preventable, which is insane, you know?
Wow.
And so when I was reading that, I felt hope, because I was like, I was so sad, and I was so like, I didn't want to go down that path or put my kids through that, you know, having gone through it myself. I was just like, you know, I can't do that to them. If I know something, I can do something about it.
And I think at one point in your book you say you were pissed.
I was.
Yeah. No, you were angry.
Yes. Very.
When you learn this stuff.
Yes.
And it there are times where it feels like this big massive cover up, but yet I don't know that it's this big conspiratorial cover up, because we've been told these things our entire life, like eat your fruits and vegetables.
It's true.
Like, is there, I mean, aside from Stranger Danger and Stop, Drop, and Roll, the third thing I remember from my youth was eat your fruits and vegetables. And yet we do everything in our power to make those either expensive or inaccessible, or actually, more importantly, we make them boring and elitist. Wet because so much other hyper palatable food is more readily accessible and cheap.
Yeah.
And it's loaded with all the things that fire up our brain.
Yeah.
Salt, sugar, oils, you know, those things that just like, yes, like it's crack.
It is. It's food crack. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that most people are food addicts, you know, because processed food addicts, because it does. It just lights our brain up like the 4th of July, you know, and it's not our fault, you know. And I mean, I don't want to say it's not the company's fault either. They're just running a business. They're just trying to make money.
That hurts.
It does hurt, you know, but I don't think they're setting out to harm people on purpose, But
yeah,
I think I know it's questionable. It's like, you know, but it's like they're just trying to make money, and unfortunately, it's just that's not a recipe for good health. You know, it's just we have to. It's so hard because we just have to see it for what it is, and you know, try to not eat those things that we're so addicted to. And it's just, it's just
and
a battle.
Good.
I know.
I survived high school on Taco Bell and McDonald's quarter pounders and milkshakes. Like I love that food so much, to the point now when I do go back to Ohio where I was raised, I instantly get triggered because my brain, I turn into 14-year-old Carrie when I go home because all of those things are still there and I start to, I don't know, you just start to crave it.
Yeah,
it's very
memories.
Pavlovian.
It is.
It's really odd. And so the battle never ends. It just gets a little easier to know, quote unquote, the enemy and know how to, battle that person, know how to fight and defend yourself against those temptations. What was the first thing that you did? So now you're reading all of this stuff and now you're like, okay, well, damn it. There's probably a link here. Great. Kale. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible. Because let's be honest, kale does sound terrible.
Yeah. Especially as the, and you know, so many people choose that as the first food to go with. And I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like, potatoes. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So how did you start this transition? And how did you position this to your husband? And did you have one child or two at the time?
Two. Yeah.
Okay. So how did that go down in the old Murphy household?
Yes. So it did actually take me several months after losing my dad and just, you know, comprehending everything, absorbing all the information. And we were actually on vacation in Disney World and I had already kind of like
buzzkill.
I know, right? I'd already kind of made up my mind that, you know, at the start of the year, January, New Year's resolution, I was committed. I was going to do this. And I hadn't really told my husband yet. And he had been talking to my brother. My brother was convincing him to do a keto diet.
Oh, yes.
And so when I overheard them, when I overheard them having this conversation, I nearly had a heart attack. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And so I took my husband aside and I said, because he wanted to, you know, eat healthier and go on a diet at the new year, of course, too. And I just said, you know, I know that you and my brother have been talking, but I would like you to consider, you know, maybe eating more plant-based. I've been doing a lot of reading. And I handed him Dr. Furman's book, Eat to Live.
Eat to Live, okay.
And I said, read this book. And after you read it, if you still want to do keto, you go right ahead. But I'm going to be doing this. And I let the decision be up to him. Read this first, and then you decide. And that's all it took. And he read it, and he's like, okay, I'm all in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Are you the luckiest spouse ever?
Yeah. Because basically he said, you know, I don't, you know, he totally, you know, the science and everything just makes sense. And he basically just said, as long as it tastes good, I'll eat it. You know? And so that I was very lucky because I know a lot of people don't have that support. Their, you know, spouses will read it and they go, I don't care, whatever, you know?
Oh yeah. I don't know that there's hard, fast data, but I would venture to say about 95% of spouses who go about this go down the road alone and not even a lot of them, it's not even like they get encouragement from their spouse. They actually get...
Against.
Yes. They actually get ridiculed and it's sabotaged in many respects. I mean, we see it all the time with some of the Plant Strong faithful that they're just like, I would love to do this, but my wife or my husband, they sabotage me. And it's just too hard.
Yeah.
So... here you are, Texarkana.
Yeah.
And for folks that don't know anything about Texarkana, Texas, it is quite literally on the border of Texas and Arkansas.
Yeah.
So not the Whole Foods headquarters market of America. And I know that at that point you were in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but still it's hard to just empty your pantry, tell your sons, by the way, those chicken McNuggets that you're about to, like, no more. Like, what did that look like? And how did that feel like with your family?
I think, you know, my kids were younger, so that was good. Because, and it is funny to go from, like, you know, eat your chicken, you got to eat your meat, to don't eat it. You know, a little confusing there.
I kind of don't, because I said so.
Exactly, you know. But my, you know, because my husband and I were on the same page, that really made a big difference. And my husband he's really good at, like, explaining things, you know, to their level and, you know, helping and just kind of being that cohesive front, you know, and like, this is what we're going to do. This is for our health. This is really important. And so it was actually not that hard because my kids were younger. It's actually harder now that they're older.
Yes.
Teenagers out of the house sometimes.
That is true.
Harder now. But it was not too bad. And I'm trying to think back. I'm like, oh yeah, gosh, that was several years ago. Like, what were we doing? But I just started cooking a lot, you know?
Okay. That was, okay. So that was kind of the question is like, did you then just start looking up recipes and go, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I have to start cooking because it's not really out there.
Like,
there's no vegan drive-thru,
exactly.
You know, whole food plant-based drive-thru. Yeah. There's no easy way to get this.
Yeah, we did. I started cooking a lot. I did use some of the vegan alternatives in the beginning. Good thing I didn't like a lot of them. You know, it was like, this doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
I just started experimenting. But I started, like, really simple. You know, I try to make things simple with swaps. Like, instead of making, like, pasta marinara, like, you don't have to have the ground beef.
Right.
You know, you can just have vegetables, like we do pasta marinara and some broccoli. And luckily, my kids actually like broccoli. Like, so
that is great.
We do lots of steamed broccoli, you know. And, you know, at that point, I hadn't even learned about soy curls, which we love these days. And I started that. Doing stuff with tofu and, you know, just
lentils,
you know, like for taco night, we'll do a can of lentils with taco seasoning. It's that simple, you know? So we really just, I started with trying to make things more, you know, similar recipes that I would make before, and do some simple swaps. And that was what I started with in the beginning. And then just trying new recipes. And we would just tell our kids, like, when I did make kale for the first time, you know, we would just put a little bit on their plate and just try it, you know, just take a bite, you know, and, there's lots of potatoes, sweet potatoes. I mean, you know, things like that. So it really started off because I was not a cook. Like, I called myself the microwave meal mom because if it wasn't frozen or prepackaged, like I was not a big cook. So it was a huge learning curve from, you know, what I was doing before, because I would do, like, lean cuisines and, like, Stouffer's lasagnas and, like, you know, I'd never made a real lasagna by myself. So when I went to go make my first, like, vegetable, like, based lasagna, it was hard because I've never even made a real lasagna. Like, I don't know.
You're like, wait a minute.
Like, how do I do this?
I need to chop all these things
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No. Yeah. No, that is so true. Even now, if I look at a recipe that has more than, like, five ingredients, it's like instant paralysis.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a lot better because most of those ingredients are, like, spices and things like that. But yeah, I love that. This whole notion of I could never do that, when people say, oh, I could never become fully vegan.
Yeah.
And that you just offered one of the most beneficial tips for anyone, which is try to veganize stuff that you already love.
Exactly.
Pizzas, burgers. I mean, no matter where I go or whatever cuisine, like, there's always something. I can always make something up. I mean, I love Thai food. Mm-hmm. I love Mexican food. Those are always great places. If you're going out with friends to a restaurant, like, you can always find something, because
there's always, like, vegetable fajitas these days, just about everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. Is it the healthiest? No, but, like, that you, we'll get to the whole, not falling into the perfection trap that I did, particularly in the beginning. So that's great. So you started making these little changes, trying to, you know, plant strong eyes, stuff that you already were making. And what changes did you see in your own health and in your own body? Mm-hmm. And about how long did that start to take?
It was really fast. In about 3 months, I lost 20 pounds and 17 inches. I didn't realize how puffy and inflamed I was, you know, because I think, oh, 20 pounds, that's not that much, you know, but I was so just puffy and just all that inflammation went away. But that brain fog that I was experiencing it just went away. Like I just had this clarity and focus. I slept better. I had more energy. I just felt like better, you know, my joints had been really just aching and hurting. And I didn't even realize it was that bad until they stopped hurting. You know, it's like, you don't realize how bad you feel until you feel good, you know, because it just becomes like this normal sense of, I'm just tired all the time. This is just how it is. And it's like, you don't realize, no, that's not normal, you know, because until you get out of that and you actually feel good and you're like, oh, this feels amazing. And it happened actually really quickly. And I did kind of, you know, go all in, you know, in the beginning, but it was kind of that same thing like that. Oh, I gotta, you know, be perfect. But then I was like, okay, no, this needs to be a lifestyle. I've got to keep this going. And because I didn't want to get to that point where you just give up and go, this is too hard.
Yes. You know? Yes. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. You weren't just at home in the kitchen all day cooking. You were a teacher, if I'm not mistaken.
When I lost my dad, I was a teacher for 17 years. And when I lost my dad that summer was just such a, you know, just turning point of like, just, you know, evaluating like, you know, everything, losing my dad and my own future in health and, you know, reading all the science and then looking at my own happiness and fulfillment and stress level of teaching, and just realizing like, I can't keep this going. I'm not happy, you know? And that was another thing of like realizing like, you know, this isn't fulfilling me anymore like it used to. And so I actually quit my teaching job that summer.
Okay.
And so that was kind of the beginning of like, you know, looking at, okay, what do I want to do? I love teaching, but I want to teach something else. And so once I kind of got into eating plant-based, it was like, this is it. I feel so great. I want to share this, you know? And so that's kind of where it started. I just transitioned basically from teaching in high school to teaching online.
Yes.
You know, and
a little different curriculum from music.
Slightly. Yeah. Just a little different. But, you know, eating healthy and nutrition was, I've always been fascinated by it and interested in it. And you know, that's the hard part is like, I'd been like studying and reading nutrition and all the diet books out there for decades. And isn't that crazy? Like I never came across until losing my dad and to the plant-based books, you know, the health aspect of it, you know, it was all the typical advice.
South Beach and the Zone.
Yeah, all
and
that stuff.
I'm trying to think of what was popular when I was, you know,
eat
in
this, not
and,
that.
Right.
You know,
God, just, talk about shaming.
I know.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that diet culture is kind of being turned on its head right now.
Yeah.
Where I'm sick of living in that space of you've earned this or eat this, not that. Like the shaming has to stop.
Yeah.
And you know, that's part of what I do want to segue into with you is you have become a health coach. You got all of the A-level certifications. Talk through what certifications that you got. Mm-hmm.
So I did my plant-based certification through T. Colin Campbell and the Center of Nutrition Studies. And then
from E. Cornell.
From E. Cornell, yes.
Yep. That's kind of a gold standard one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, and that was all about the plant-based nutrition side. But then I was like, I really want to learn how to help people behavior change because that's really the hardest part. And so I did the health coaching certification from the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. And actually right now I also joined, cause I just can't stop learning. I'm just a sponge for like everything. I joined the Food Revolution Network's plant-based certification program, like their cohort right now. So I'm super excited to dig into their curriculum.
I was so close to joining that one
You know what? You should still, I think they're still maybe accepting people. It's,
yeah. Yeah. I know. I was getting all the emails and I was like, oh man, just to learn. I don't know that I want to use it, put it in into any practical use, but like, I'm like you. Like, I just want to keep learning. Yeah. I just need to reinforce all of these things that I firmly believe. So you are armed up with all of the degrees to teach people. And you are on fire with the passion to do so. And how did you then launch this online business? Mm-hmm. Because this is, again, I think another discussion point for an I could never do that moment, because talk about being vulnerable and going all in on something that's really not proven, you know, like you're new to plant-based, you're new to this style of education. Online learning is just now coming into vogue, and you have tossed your teaching career aside in conventional schools to go, I think I can do this. Yeah. Like, whew. I mean, I'm thinking right now, I could never do that.
I'll be honest. It was terrifying in the beginning, but it was also, I think that's like, you have to know your why. Why am I doing this? Why am I going to risk putting myself out there and have people, you know, ridicule you, you know, or tell you, you know, oh, your stuff is crazy, you know, it's like, but I was so passionate about it, and I knew it was right. And like you said, I was pissed off that people don't know this, you know, and I feel like it's being hidden from us. And so I just wanted to put my voice out there and try to teach people, you know, another way. Mm-hmm, and so I started I kind of started with just, you know, it was accountability for myself and just posting recipes on my blog, on a website, and sharing my journey too. That was the other thing, is I did like a weekly food journal and just talked about my week and how I was doing. And I just put it all out there, kind of also as that accountability for myself, was like, okay, you know, if I put it out there, I got to commit to it, you know? And so that really helped me be accountable as well, because, you know, there was no Facebook group I knew about then. I didn't have anybody really to support me except, you know, just putting this out here online. And I remember the first time I published the very first blog post and I was going to share it to my Facebook page, I was literally shaking.
Oh my gosh.
So scared. I was terrified, because I just thought, I'm sharing something that I believe in so passionately to my friends and family. And what if people just laugh? And what if they make fun of me or tell me I don't know what I'm talking about? Because, you know, everybody's saying, eat more meat. Yes. Here I am saying, don't.
Don't eat any.
Don't eat any, you know? Yeah. And so it was scary. It was really scary.
Was there somebody at the time, 2019, 2020, God, in many ways, 2020 seems like yesterday because of all of the pandemic. And then in many ways, it seems like it was 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. But was there somebody at the time that you thought was doing it right, or that you were looking to in that space, that was like, man, I really want to emulate this person because they're approaching it in a very welcoming way? It's not preachy. It's not condemning of anybody else. Was there was there somebody like that?
I'm trying to think back when I first started, who I was following. I definitely read Rip Esselstyn's books, and I loved his kind of no nonsense message and his personality. And I, you know, watched Forks Over Knives and all that. And I'm trying to think if, like, I had been following Chef AJ then and love her personality and just, you know, interviewing all the wonderful doctors.
She's
and everything.
She's a feisty one.
She is. I'm trying to think of any other. It was such at the beginning of my journey, and I hadn't really discovered a lot of people at that point yet, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was, honestly, I'm trying to think of, like, who I was trying to emulate, and I really wasn't, you know, which is kind of good, because I was just trying to be me, you know, and just be authentic and just be kind of just a imperfect voice, you know, because I think for me, it was like, I hadn't at the time found, which was an imperfect person saying, it's okay not to be perfect. Just do the best you can. you know? And so I was trying to be that because that's kind of what I needed. And I hadn't quite found, you know, I wasn't a big social media person, honestly. So it was like, you know, I was having to kind of discover, you know, this whole world that I didn't even know was there.
Ugh. Yeah. Can we put that genie back in the bottle?
I know.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I appreciate that answer. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the fact that you were just looking for somebody like you. So you weren't seeing it. So you mm-hmm. had to create it.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. Rip Esselstyn, of course, was my entry into mm-hmm. it. And like you said, I also appreciated his almost like bro-ish
yeah.
approach to it because yeah. I have four brothers and I just sort of have that attitude in life. And mm-hmm. he wasn't trying to make it elitist. He wasn't trying to, I mean, at the time what appealed to me is that he actually never used the word vegan.
Mm-hmm.
He still rarely
yeah.
does,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it was the Engine 2 Plant Strong diet. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading his very first book and I closed it and I was like, so is it vegan?
Yeah. People ask me that all the time because I'm kind of the same way. I don't really use the word vegan all the time unless I'm at a restaurant because
yes,
you have
yes.
to explain that in the terms that people understand.
Yes.
But
yes.
I say plant-based all the time because I feel it's more encompassing and welcoming, mm-hmm. you know, it's less about what not to eat and more about what to eat first and focus on, you know, it's like fill your plate up with plants as many as you can first. You know, and that helps kind of crowd out everything else, you know, because we hadn't talked about this. You can be vegan, but also a junk food vegan.
very much so.
Yeah.
And I personally can be that.
Yeah.
And you and I were talking before we hit the mic and you even alluded to it earlier of like, I definitely have put a lot of those plant-based options on my plate that you see now in the frozen food section mm-hmm. at a lot of places and the Beyonds and the Impossibles and ooh, they're good, but ooh, they're not healthy.
Not healthy. I know.
Yeah, they are tasty. I'm
yeah.
not gonna lie. Like it fires up that.
Oh yeah.
It fires up those senses and even the vegan cheeses.
Yeah.
And I think we all know that, when you're making this transition, the one stopper for a lot of people is cheese.
Yeah.
They don't know how they're going to live without cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I mean, it's hard.
It's addictive.
It is so hard. And so, how did you use like the dyes mm-hmm. and the transitional cheeses until you just sort of weaned them mm-hmm. off?
Yeah, that's really kind of what it was, especially, and that was the hardest thing for me wasn't giving up meat. I don't know. I'm just like, meh.
Yeah.
But the cheese is probably the hardest part for most people. And so I was like, okay, that one thing, I'm going to give myself time mm-hmm. to wean off of that. So I started buying less and less real cheese. I did try and buy some of the vegan cheeses, and at that time they were not good. So it wasn't even a good, I was like, this doesn't taste good. And so, you know, they kind of helped, you know, but I would use them on occasion, but I would just buy less and less and less cheese. And, you know, anytime I would make something that I would normally have put cheese on, it was like, okay, could I just leave this off, or is there something I could use in place, you know, maybe some avocado or something like that, you know? And so I would start just like kind of just trying it. Okay, I'm going to try it without and see how it goes. And I'm like, oh, I don't really miss it, you know? And it took me about a year before I really kind of cut the cord with cheese and was able to say, I don't feel addicted to it anymore, you know, where you get to the point where I haven't had any cheese and I haven't even thought about it. Oh my gosh, I don't miss it. Like, I remember that moment and feeling free of like, I don't feel like emboldened to like, I have to have this thing. It's like, I can just, no, I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think cigarettes, alcohol, and cheese are probably three of the most addictive, maybe coffee mm-hmm, or caffeine,
mm-hmm.
Four of the most addictive things that are just ubiquitous in our society and almost conventional. I mean, you almost have to justify why you're not eating cheese or why you're not drinking alcohol or whatever. Mm-hmm. Everything else is perfectly acceptable. Now, when you started to coach people, and this is what you're doing now, I mean, your career is coaching. Your website is
simplyplantbasedkitchen.com.
Simplyplantbasedkitchen.com.
Yep.
And you counsel people and you coach people through, I'm sure, either some health challenges and even if it's not current health challenges, you are helping people prevent future potential lifestyle disease. What are some of the obstacles that you're coming up against with people? What do you hear the most besides cheese?
Yeah, I would say cheese is definitely a big one. So we talk about that one all the time. People are always like, what do I use instead of cheese or butter? You know, what do I use instead of butter? Well, it's like, well, it depends. What are you using that butter for? You know, and we go down that path like if, okay, it's for toast, avocado toast. Oh, you know, in recipes, it's so easy to swap different. Now I know all the swaps for you know, baking things, so easy. But besides that, I would say it's the social aspect, going out to eat, traveling, family, you know, what do I, you know, how do I handle the holidays? You know, what, when we are so, I mean, it's just, it's kind of in our DNA, there's the social connection and, you know, community and everything is so, you know, wanting to belong and fit in and not look different, be made fun of. And even if, you know, your family isn't actively against you, it still feels, it's hard to be different, you know. But there are some people who literally do have their family against them, you know, they're constantly questioning their choices. And so it's kind of helping them navigate those situations of like, what do I say? What do I do? You know, and a lot of times it's pretty simple of like, okay, if you're going somewhere, either eat before you go, bring something with you, you know. If you're going out to eat, we talk about different options that they can choose that are, you know, maybe not perfect, you know, but are better. And so it's really, it's that part of it, I think, is the hardest for most people is just the social aspect of it.
Yeah.
How do I make this work for my life? You know, I don't want to live in my house as a hermit. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go out. I want to be with friends. And like, how do I navigate this without feeling like a freak, you know?
Yeah. And to always have to be the squeaky wheel. Mm-hmm. And I'm also very sensitive to that when I go out to restaurants, because in general, I'm the squeaky wheel that's like, excuse me
for a minute.
Yeah,
it's going to take a minute.
And I always
have a lot of questions.
And I usually lead with humor because it disarms everyone. And I'm always like, yep, okay, I'm the creepy vegan. Mm-hmm. So like, what can we play with here? I see, you know, I see this on your menu. I see that on your menu. Can we like, do we have a veggie plate with some rice and beans? Like, what can we put together? And
exactly.
In, you know, 90% of the time we make it work. Mm-hmm. Or, I will look at a menu before I even go out.
100%.
So that there's no awkwardness with me and anyone else. Mm-hmm. I have found that what's funny, and I do this with people too. Like if I have a friend that's, I don't know, if I have a friend that's not drinking or that doesn't drink, I'm always like, oh, look, did you see they have mocktails? You know, and I'm like, I'm pointing out the things on the menu that, that they can very clearly read themselves. And people will do that to me, and I'm sure they do that. They're like, look, they've got like, they've got a pasta here that says vegetarian. I'm like, that's great. Thank you. I can see that. But yeah, and I think people, it helps though, if I do get a chance to look at a menu before I go out, if it's a new place, you know, and just takes the decision fatigue out of it for me, and it takes the awkwardness out of it for anyone else. What about this whole notion that you have to be perfect?
Oh my gosh.
This whole like, because I think, unfortunately, social media and our, some of our heroes that we do look up to, give this persona online that everything that they do is perfect, that every meal is perfectly scripted to have fruits and vegetables and only the freshest ingredients and all the beans and the legumes and everything else that they, you know, that is readily available to them. And, you know, some of that is just bullshit. You know?
Totally.
I'm not saying that they're in the corner eating steak.
Right.
When nobody's looking.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that like, people aren't perfect all the time. So unfortunately, we walk into something, we see these things online where we have this, we just have this perception that those that we look up to are just doing it right all the time. So how do you counsel the people that you work with of like, just, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah. I talk about that all the time about progress, not perfection, you know, especially because the people that I work with, they're at the beginning of their stages. And if they set themselves, their bar so high that it's just, you know, a huge jump, a huge leap for them to take in a matter of days, like I know that they're setting themselves up for failure. You know, that's just not how habit change works. I mean, you're learning a completely new lifestyle and you can't do that overnight. There is literally just too much to learn because it's not even just going vegan. It's going whole food plant-based. And there's just, I mean, cooking alone, if you're not a cook, or if you've never cooked without oil or salt and sugar, it's hard. You know, there's just too much to learn. And I think that, you know, we see everything curated so beautifully and perfectly on our profiles and our feeds and, you know, just everything, you know, is perfect, perfect, perfect. And everybody's lives are perfect and their children and everything are perfect. And I'm just like, and I watch that and I just go, but I'm not perfect. So where do I fit in?
No, we're messes.
We are all messes. And so it's like, I try to be as honest as I can. Like, I'm not perfect. I do the best I can every single day. You know, it's like I'm cooking whole food plant-based, but sometimes we go out to eat, like, it may have oil in it. It may have, I'm definitely going to have salt in it. Like, that's like near impossible to avoid, you know? And it's like, I just try to make the best choice I can wherever I'm at, whatever that means, you know, whatever that means. And that could be a different for every single person, what that means for you, wherever you are at in your journey, you know? And I think that we need to be more, I guess, living in that gray area of like, it doesn't have to be black or white, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's just, it could be, you know, as simple as like, you know, eating more vegetables on your plate where you used to eat none. Oh my gosh, huge. Congratulations. Yes. That's a huge step forward. And I think that like, that's what I try to take my clients through in my program, Plant Powered Life, is that it's, I don't tell them to go 100%. I actually tell them, don't do that, you know, because that's really, that's not how you're going to be able to sustain this as a lifestyle. That's a diet mentality, that perfectionism, rigid, calorie counting, portion control, you know, restrictive way of living. That's a diet. And you're not going to keep that going because you're going to hate it. You know, I want you to enjoy this and let it be a journey that you're learning and growing as you go. I'm a very different eater than I was 5 years ago on my, when I first started. Like, I've learned so much in those 5 years, and I've learned to give myself grace too. And I think we need to all give ourselves more love and grace and acceptance and less like, gosh, you messed up. You're such a failure. You know, we have such negative talk in our minds all the time. It's like we're putting ourselves down. And we can't be successful if we're doing that.
No.
You know?
No. And just hearing you say it out loud, it breaks my heart that we are that way to ourselves. And it also pisses me off, or as I've heard other people, it chaps my ass that we've like we've been raised to berate ourselves when we're not reaching some impossible standard of perfection because somebody has told us something that that we should be doing or shouldn't be doing in some cases.
And I think that whole food plant-based eating, like, you know, is definitely the best, you know, in my opinion, you know, the best way, the healthiest way to eat and everything. And it's a great ideal and standard, and get as close as you can. But if you're not there 100% all the time, that's okay. You know what I mean? Because as close as you can, if you're doing 90%, oh my gosh, that's huge.
That's huge.
That is huge. Like compared to our standard American diet, I tell these people this all the time. Like our standard American diet is like 10% fruits and vegetables and 90% animal and processed foods. If you just flip that, holy cow, your health will just transform without having to be perfect, you know?
Yes. I thank you. That feels so good. It feels so much more attainable.
Yeah.
to somebody who might be plant curious, as they say, or there's so many new phrases out there now. There's the plant slant, there's plant predominant, plant forward, plant powered. Yeah. Yeah, which I want to talk about because I'm staring at the cover of your book that you wrote, which is also an I could never do that. Yeah, in the last 5 years, Kim, my goodness.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that this is what your life would be? That's, you know.
Mm-mm.
It's like unfathomable to think that you were a school teacher for 17 years, raising kids, taking care of your father in his final years. And 5 years down the road, now you are a health coach. You are an author.
Which is crazy.
Yes. So tell me, the book is called Plant Powered, How to Prevent or Reverse Chronic Diseases, Lose Weight, and Feel Great with the Power of Whole Plants. I mean, that just sums up the mission.
It does, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And so what made you extrapolate all of this knowledge that you've gained into a book? Because the way I look at it, as I was reading through it and thumbing through it, like, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, this is all stuff that I've heard and I've known, but I'm like, there really isn't much out there that just sort of summarizes why a whole food plant-based diet is really great for many reasons, like this book. Like, the simplicity of it is like, here's your reference guide.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah.
Read it. So what made you want to go down this laborious path?
Oh, gosh. And that's kind of the reason, is because I had been, you know, posting online, and I had created my online course, and I had, you know, blog posts and recipes and, you know, all this information out there, but it wasn't in one kind of digestible form. And so many people were always asking me, picking my brain. And it was just like, I needed something to hand to them to go, read this. This is everything, you know? And so it was literally a download of my brain and just everything I had researched and things that really, you know, inspired me and really kind of like really connected to me and made it. And I was trying to definitely keep it, you know, simple, you know, because there are great books out there and I love all the science. Oh my gosh, I could just go down that path all day long, but not everybody wants to read, you know, an encyclopedia,
right?
You know, so I tried to pick out my favorite, you know, of the scientific resources and research that really, you know, struck a chord with me.
And I'm looking through, as I'm thumbing through the book right now, like one, two, three, there's, I mean, I don't, what, 15, 20 pages of scientific sources at the end. And you cite all of these studies. And that is sort of funny to me, is like, people want this hard proof. Like, tell me, show me the science of why this is great. You know, like, this is better. And it's like, you've got 20 pages right here of science and research. But like, nowhere else is anybody asking for the science behind anything in life, really. We just like take things with a grain of salt, but you know, why vegetables are the healthiest.
Isn't that
like
the silliest thing? I need proof that I should eat my fruits and veggies.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Okay.
It is the silliest thing. Like, I feel like I'm saying like the most common sense things, but people are always questioning it.
Right. No, and I love that. Silly. I love that you did put a lot of these citations and these research studies in there, just to have that in your back pocket. What I do love is like you make a case for the three main reasons, I think, why people go whole food plant-based, or why people are at least starting to explore this way, this lifestyle, is the three main reasons, I think, are health, whether you are currently experiencing health issues or you want to prevent potential health issues down the line. I think environment and climate, say what you will, but it has a tremendous impact, and you do go into some detail on some of that here. And I think the third reason is animal welfare. One of the good things about social media is that finally people are starting to get that peek behind the curtain of factory farms, and they are seeing what no one wants to see.
And there's a reason why it's being hidden.
There's a reason why there are laws against it, because it's disgusting and deplorable. But yet, it leaves an impact. Mm-hmm. And I think now people want to make more informed choices about their food. So whether or not you choose to eat a pig or chicken, whatever, like at least try to figure out where it's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's coming from those things that I pass on I-10 when I'm leaving Texas, oh my God. And you're going to like, trust me, I'd rather eat a stalk of raw kale than that.
Yeah.
So you talk about those three things. But what I really like at the end, and this is sort of how I want to wrap up this conversation with you in this book, and I highly encourage people to purchase it. Amazon?
Yeah,
your
Amazon.
Website,
yeah.
Is there like, okay.
Yeah, on Amazon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And as you're talking through, you have an acronym for health. Mm-hmm. I really, like, we love that.
Yes.
We love it because I want to frame this conversation up in a positive way. You have done some things that so many of us say we could never do. You made a radical lifestyle change. And I say, we use the word radical, which is ridiculous. You made like a positive lifestyle change. Radical, as Dr. Esselstyn says, is getting your chest cracked open to fix a heart. You made a wonderful lifestyle change. A lot of people say they could never do that. You did it. You made a massive career change, in the middle of a pandemic with two young kids and a spouse. Again, a lot of people say they could never do that. You did it. And you wrote a book in the last 2 years, year, 2 years. A lot of people would say, I could never do that. And you did it.
Been
so
busy.
We have a lot to learn from you. We have a lot to learn from you. I mean, this book could be about how to like knit a sweater. The point is you did something that a lot of people say they could never do. So how does that make you feel?
You know, you kind of put it like that. I was like, I'm pretty proud of myself. It's been, you know, it's crazy. These past 5 years have been so short, but so long too. It was like, you know, you just, cause you get so busy in what you're doing day to day. And then you kind of look back and go, oh, wow, I did just do that. And a lot of these things were terrifying to do, but I wanted to do it more than I was afraid. And that was kind of the point. The book was a scary thing to do because I knew it was going to take a long time. And, you know, that's those limiting beliefs of like, I could never do that. And this is, you know, who's going to listen to me? And, you know, am I good enough to do this? I've never written a book before. And so it was a year long process of writing that. It was the hardest thing probably I've ever done in my life.
It is, yeah, it's very well laid out, Kim.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's very well laid out. And I know that if I, the first time I would have to like make a scientific citation, I would have quit.
Yeah. It's like scares you. You're like, I got to make sure if all this is right. I can't screw this up. And it's scary.
Yeah.
Putting yourself out there.
Did you have an editor? I know you self-published,
but
how did you go about the editing process?
Yeah. So I did self-publish and I hired an editor to help, you know, make sure everything was right. And because, I mean, I hadn't written a research paper in decades. I didn't even know how to do like all like formatting, like how to do the superscripts and I didn't do it because she did it. You know,
yeah.
I was like, I don't know how to do this, but.
I would have, same.
Yeah.
But you didn't let that stop you.
No. I think that like if there's a will, there's a way. There's always somebody it knows how to do it. I think there was a quote I heard somebody tell me one time, and it's not how, but who.
Mm.
So and if you don't know how, that's okay. You don't have to know everything. Just find someone who does. Somebody knows how to do it and they can help you do it or do it for you, you know? And so that's what it was like. My editor really helped a ton. And her story is at the end because after she edited the book, she was so inspired. She went plant-based. So her story is at the very end and it's like wraps everything up. She's like, and I was like, I have to include this. This is incredible.
What a great way to end this book and really like dot the I on your statement of what you were trying to put out in the world. Part three of the book is called Your Path to Health. And this is sort of where I want to summarize everything and kind of wrap everything up. And HEALTH is an acronym. And so we'll just quickly go through the letters. So H is for harnessing the power of whole grains for gut health.
Yes.
What? You want me to eat carbs?
I know, right? People always freak out. They're like, too many carbs. I'm like, carbs are good for you. And I have to convince them and show them all the science. But so it's like every week, you know, I take people through, okay, week one is H. That's all you're going to do. You're just going to focus on swapping out, you know, instead of refined grains, whole grains. You know, it's that simple. And let's not do too much. That's all you got to focus on in week one.
Yeah. And so by whole grains, you are talking about, you know, obviously certain people have sensitivities or are gluten intolerant. And so by whole intact grains, we're talking about things like whole wheat pasta, if you can have wheat. Mm-hmm. We're talking about quinoa, barley, brown rice,
oats.
Yes. I'm the steel cut queen. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm kind of the rolled oats queen these days now, because you can buy like a 15 pound bag of rolled oats.
So cheap.
Mm-hmm. So cheap. Throw some flax and chia on there, a little peanut butter for me, and I'm off to the races or to the bathroom, as it were. So that's H.
Yes.
So it's harnessing the power of whole grains. Mm-hmm. Why is it good for gut health? Just quickly.
Yeah. We need all that fiber. Like there's just that. It's a fascinating new area of research about our gut microbiome and all the fiber that we need to have good immunity and good health and lower inflammation. It's like our gut bugs make up more of who we are than we even are. And it's like we're not feeding them enough of that great fiber. And a lot of it comes from those whole grains.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Is for enjoying fruit for improved immunity. Fruit.
I know. That's another one. People are like,
you
evil. Want more carbs in fruit? Is fruit okay for diabetics? And I'm like, yes.
It's
oh my gosh.
All of those things. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think once again, we've been sold a bill of goods by social media and quick fixes, in that yes, fruit does have sugar, yes, but it also has fiber, it also has phytonutrients. So many of the minerals that we need are also in these fruits. Mm-hmm. Like, great, don't drink a glass of apple juice,
eat
an apple. I challenge you, in fact, to eat two apples in one city. I challenge you.
I know.
Impossible. Because the fiber intake and the water intake will fill you up. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with fruit, is that it has both fiber and water, which are essentially, they're essentials for life.
Yes.
We water plants to make them grow. And so we need the same water. Is there anything else that you kind of want to chat with about that in the fruit category?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, some of the fascinating studies are that they've done studies to see, is there any, can you eat too much fruit? What happens if you eat, you know, 20 servings of fruit a day? And guess what? It's only good things. Lower A1C, lower body weight, lower cholesterol, lower, you know, blood pressure. It's like, you can't eat too much fruit. So when people say, well, is there too much or any fruit I need to avoid? No. If it's fruit, eat it. Mm-hmm. The whole fruit, not the fruit juice, like you mentioned, you know, because then you're getting all the extra benefit and it's not just a shot of sugar, you know?
Sure, sure. And just to touch on that really quickly, there are several schools of thought on smoothies. Mm-hmm. And you, there are lots of opinions on whether or not smoothies are good or bad, or I hate those two words anyways, but, you know, the case against a smoothie, or at least a lot of smoothies, the case against it is that when you're blending up those whole fruits and those vegetables, you are pulverizing a lot of that fiber. Mm-hmm. And so you're losing some of the satiety that you would get if you just ate a big salad or if you just ate a bowl of fruit.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the case against drinking too many smoothies. Mm-hmm. It's essentially a calorie bomb without that added benefit of getting the fiber in there. However, I will also say that, like, if in the instance you are trying to get more fruits and vegetables in your body and that is the only way that's palatable for you at this time, do it.
Absolutely.
Get the stuff in your body.
And just and drink it slower. Like I've heard that as well. It's like, so it is blended. And so if you're drinking it really fast, then that could shoot your blood sugar up a lot faster. So, you know, drink it slowly, you know, and but it's a great, like, I'm personally not a big smoothie person. I like to chew my food. It just, yeah. You know, you have that, that's part of that satiety of just chewing. But for my kids, that's a great way to get some kale in their diet because they can't taste it.
Yes.
Like, here, honey, have a smoothie, you know?
Yes.
And it's, and I always put blueberries in it because it covers the color.
Yes. Yeah. Or, if you don't do peanut butter, the PB2 yes. pure mm-hmm. is a really good. Mm-hmm. So it gives it that like peanut buttery taste yes, to
strawberries
it.
And the PB2 powder
so and a little good. Banana oh,
yes
oh man mm-hmm. and throw a little spinach in there
yeah exactly
it's heaven. A is for adding colorful vegetables to supercharge your nutrient density mm-hmm. colorful vegetables I just thought they were green
I know right yeah we need to eat the rainbow because all the different colors mean different things mm-hmm. you know so if we're only eating green and green is great you know you need red and orange and yellow and even white you know with the mushrooms and the onions and you know there's so many different benefits from all the different colors and you know trying to eat the rainbow as much as you can mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. really just get all those I mean it's like yeah duh eat your vegetables but we're not doing it
right
you know
right. Well and it feels hard and, yeah. and like I get it feels hard because you're just like okay I'm gonna go pick up a red pepper oh I have to cut it
yeah
and
I know
it sounds funny to say yeah. it but like I feel the inertia
yeah.
like and then you're like oh well then what do I do with mm-hmm. it like and I think you know through your health classes and the courses you teach you probably offer a lot of solutions for sneaking vegetables into mm-hmm. things that you wouldn't really that aren't laborious and that don't feel like it's a chore
yes.
or like, ugh, now I'm just eating healthy. But mm-hmm. things like putting those vegetables in the marinara sauce,
yes.
like you mentioned, throwing mm-hmm. them in a stir fry. Mm-hmm. Are there any other suggestions that?
Oh, yes, because I'm busy and I actually hate chopping. I just like, it's like, ugh, I've got to cut. So I'm like always looking for shortcuts. I do lots of frozen fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. you know, because it's just, and because you can throw it in a stir fry and or steam them and it's just super fast and easy and I actually have a secret to my cashew based sauces that I do now
okay
I used to do all cashews but I really wanted to cut the fat down and mm-hmm. so now I only do a half a cup of cashews and I'll do 4 cups of steamed cauliflower in all my sauces so you're getting cruciferous vegetables the my kids can't taste it. People love it. It's creamy. It's got enough, you know, just a little bit of the cashews, but way less fat and still creamy and delicious. And you don't taste the cauliflower. You
right.
don't taste it at
all. It is
a
tasteless yes. vegetable.
Yes.
But you know, when cauliflower is like, you know, when you get the party trays for your parties and you've got like the broccoli and the snap peas and the carrots and mm-hmm. No one eats the cauliflower.
Except for me. You know,
it's hard to eat.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Because raw cauliflower is just like
hard.
It's just, yes. I get it. I'm like, ew, no. No, but throw some buffalo sauce on
I know,
that.
Right? Oh, yes.
Your girl, man.
Yes.
But yeah, I love that. I love that there are these. That's a great mm-hmm. trip. I had not, or a great trick. I had not thought of that. I will, because I'm not a cashew fan mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. So I make a lot of my, creamy based sauces with like white beans mm-hmm. so like that's another mm-hmm. if you're trying to cut down on fat
mm-hmm.
Anyways that's another great tip
yeah.
love the cauliflower tip some people put like the minced cauliflower or the riced cauliflower mm-hmm. in their oatmeal in the morning
oh
that's a trick that I've seen people do
nice.
So they're mixing in a couple of tablespoons of that with their oatmeal to get some of their cruciferous vegetables
cool. that's a good one.
In for breakfast
I like that
yeah I do too I've not tried it yet
yeah.
So that was A. Mm-hmm. L is love legumes for high protein and fiber.
Yes. My favorite.
Beans.
Yes.
Beans. You have a little section here. So I don't want to go down the rabbit hole too much of the whole like lectins and mm-hmm. soy and all that stuff. That's for a different conversation, but what do you have a little section here that I haven't read mm-hmm. about gas and bloating.
Yes.
What do you want to tell me about farts?
Well, I would say definitely in this category, go slow. Slow yes. and low, I think is what Dr. Will Bolshewitz says.
Dr. B.
Yeah, yep. Dr. B says, yep. go low and slow. So start with just a little bit, you know, a couple tablespoons a day of beans, and then see how you do. And then gradually increase because your gut bacteria is just not used to it. It's got to learn how to, you know, digest this new fiber it's never experienced before. And so you have to take your time. Lentils are great to start with because a lot of people kind of digest those a little easier. And then I do tons of canned beans for convenience. And
I do too.
You know, but low sodium, no salt mm-hmm. added, BPA-free cans. And a lot of people digest those better. But if you're doing dried beans, that's great. Just be sure to soak them for, you know, 48 hours at least. Change out the water a few times, and it really helps remove a lot of that raffinose that will really cause the, you know, gas problems in the beginning.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's funny that you say that. As I said, my husband has started to cook more like soups and stews in our mm-hmm. Instant Pot, and he's really on this kick of like buying the dried beans mm-hmm. and soaking them for a couple of nights. And I'm a little misconvenienced.
Yeah, I'm too. Give me
what?
A can.
I'm like, are we homesteading next? Like, yeah.
Where's the garden?
Are we going to ferment?
Yeah.
Although I do sprout occasionally. I don't have any sprout. I don't have anything sprouting right now, but I do sprout things because it makes me happy to see chia seeds sprout and broccoli sprouts.
Yeah.
So yeah, mm-hmm. that's the other thing is like this thing, it's kind of fun actually.
Uh-huh.
Down to tea is trading oil for nuts and seeds to support your brain and heart.
Mm-hmm.
And oil is another topic that we could certainly go down rabbit holes.
That's a long
whether
one.
It's mm-hmm. healthy, health promoting mm-hmm. or not.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be in the camp where I minimize any oil as much as possible.
Yeah, me too.
And yeah, that is to say that when I go out to restaurants, I realize that it's out of my control.
Yeah.
And I will do what I can mm-hmm. to minimize my oil consumption. But in general, the oils that we are getting, even the extra virgin olive oil that we're getting in jars is very, very processed.
Yes.
Like, Luigi in Italy did not pick that olive off the tree and press it for your Heinz bottle of olive oil. No, it went through a lot of processing. So just be wary of mm-hmm. that. And also understanding the caloric density and just step up. Like, I always try to illustrate this with photos of like, you know, one tablespoon. Mm-hmm. of olive oil has
120 grams of pure fat.
Yes.
120
calories of pure fat. And so what is it? 9 grams of fat per calorie, right?
9 calories per gram.
Nine calories per gram of fat. Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, suffice to say one tablespoon of anything that has 120 calories is not going to fill you up.
Mm-mm.
And if you ate 120 calories of spinach, that's like 20 cups.
Yeah, it's a huge amount.
So that's the caloric density illustration that I like to show people. So if mm-hmm. you are going to use oil, just realize like it's very calorically mm-hmm. dense and you can easily down 500 or 600 calories a day.
Easy.
Without even thinking about it.
I actually, it's funny you said that. I got an email a couple days ago and a guy was like, you know, I'm on a plant-based diet or mostly, and you know, what do you have to teach me? Because I can't seem to lose weight and I'm cooking everything in extra virgin olive oil and coconut oil, like they say to do. And I just thought, that's it right there. That's why you can't lose weight. Mm-hmm. You may be eating a plant-based diet, but if you're smothering it in probably even 1,000 calories of pure fat, you're not going to lose weight. Right. You're going to gain weight, you know? Just cut the oil out, and it's amazing what that simple little, even minimizing it, can make a huge difference to mm-hmm. somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And another thing that I hear a lot is like, well, how do you saute? How do you cook without mm-hmm. oil? What are some substitutes? And the things that I usually just offer to people are like, hey, you can dry saute mm-hmm. anything, or you can saute in just water, vegetable broth. I saute with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, applesauce I know is used often as a substitute for oils and things like that. Are there any other tips that you
I like
lemon juice?
Definitely sauteing with just a little splash of water or vegetable broth is kind of my go-to. If I'm using frozen veggies, I don't even need it because they've got that water kind of frozen on them. But I love using aquafaba, the liquid from canned chickpeas, canned beans really, but usually we use canned chickpeas for like roasting veggies because people always say, well, how do I, you know, roast my veggies? Well, I actually don't use anything a lot of the times. I'll just like from washing them, they're still a little wet, you know, it'll, you know, hold the spices on there just fine. But if you want to, you can just use aquafaba as a 1-to-1 ratio. And I even use that in making, if I'm making cornbread, I use that instead of oil for savory things. I use that to make dressings. I've even heard people, I haven't done this yet, people use it to make meringues. Has the protein in there. You can even like whip it. Wow. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That's insinuating that I'm going to make a meringue, which is not going to happen.
That's not going to happen for me either. But, you know, people will ask me things like that. I'm like, oh, I don't know. But I look it up, sure enough, you can do that.
Yes. I use aquafaba to make hummus quite a bit.
Yes, me too. Yes.
I make my own hummus quite a bit. And it's great. Yeah. You're just blending up chickpeas and
you've got
the juice right
there.
Pour a little
in.
Mm-hmm. So instead of using a ton of tahini, for example, I usually kind of what you did with the cauliflower and the cashews, I will do with tahini and the aquafaba.
Yes.
So I'll just use less tahini and maybe a little more aquafaba to give it that liquid. The final one, the final H in your health acronym is how to keep your plant powered life going long term. Whew. There's a lot of great topics in here too, Kim. The one that I just honed in on, is aside from loving yourself, I really think that a lot of it is planning, prepping, but finding a community.
Yes.
So what do you have to say about like finding that community?
Yes. So important. And probably the reason why when I first tried to go plant-based several years ago and couldn't keep it going is I didn't have anybody. I was all alone. I had no community. I had no resources. I was just trying to figure it out. And so I just had nobody to lean on and I had no support. And so having, you know, a community or a friend, you know, if it's somebody local or a Facebook group or whatever, I find that that is the key piece for a lot of people because you know what? You're going to struggle. It's going to be hard sometimes. You need support and we have to find our people, you know, our people that understand and are, you know, can help us get back on track and give us new tips and recipes and answer questions. And it just makes everything feel easier because you have somebody to fall back on. Yeah. And I find that that's one of the key pieces that people really like in my program, Plant Power Life, is we have a wonderful Facebook group community where everybody's supportive of each other. And I do coaching calls every month where we see each other face to face on Zoom and like talk to each other and support each other. And, you know, we need that connection, that social connection. Like I mentioned before, for a lot of people, that's the hardest part is getting past, you know, how do I do this, you know, socially with my family and everything. It's like, you need to find your kind of new community to, you know, be a part of, to give you that, what you need, you know?
Yeah. Thank you for all of this and this summary and for being such an example of doing those things that so many people say they could never do or something that feels too insurmountable. Because all of these things that we talked about today, I'm sure at one point felt a little insurmountable for you.
Yes.
And by just chipping away and doing the work, finding people to help you, finding the community, you have really accomplished something and are building like your little empire. Yeah. So where can people tell us your website again and then kind of give us are you always taking on new clients or do you do these things in waves or how does that work?
Yeah. So my website is simplyplantbasedkitchen.com and I have my program Plant Powered Life and I kind of take in people like, you know, kind of in groups. I kind of finished a challenge, to kind of it was called the Plant-Based Beginners Boot Camp. And
love it.
And we had over 40,000 people register.
Oh my God. Yes. Amazing.
It was huge. It was the biggest one yet. And it was, it was a lot of the science in the beginning stages of, like, you know, just learning about it, learning about this lifestyle. And then those who, you know, wanted to come and continue working with me can. And, but it's been, yeah, it's been phenomenal, you know, just helping people wherever they're at in their journey and just giving them, like I mentioned this to them a couple weeks ago, is that, you know, our country was founded on freedom. But if we don't have the truth, we don't have freedom. We don't have freedom of choice. If we don't know, you know, if we're not educated about, like, what is the best way to eat, you know, or eat more of, and choices to make, we can't make that choice. My dad didn't have that choice. He didn't have the information, you know? And so I just want to spread, you know, that information and education so people can then make a decision. You know, you can learn about this and go, not for me. Okay. You know, but at least you have the information to make that choice and have the freedom, you know, to have your health.
I'll see you this weekend at the half marathon.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming over and for sharing this. Mm-hmm. I'm such a champion of yours, and I'm really, really happy for you and what everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome.
What a fun interview with Kim Murphy. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks, Kim, for coming over. Some key takeaways for me from this episode, really, of regardless of what habit change or career change or any massive accomplishment that you want to achieve, find the people that are doing it, find the people that can help you, and absorb all you can from them. Do not be afraid to ask questions. Do not be afraid to ask them for mentorship. Don't be afraid to hire them if you need to. There's so many people that we can learn from to get us from where we are to where we want to go. So if you want to learn more about Kim and her work, you can go to simplyplantbasedkitchen.com. That's simplyplantbasedkitchen.com. And buy that new book. That's a self-published book. And the amount of work and time and money that goes into that is almost unfathomable. So the best that we all can do is support independent authors and artists. Have a great day. And we'll see you next time on I Could Never Do That.